with flaring success. She had been urged by her agent to give half a dozen more, the glory of which, he guaranteed, would completely eclipse that of the first series, but instead she had come back to England. She did not quite know why she had done so. Her husband Bertie had sent the most cordial message to say that he and their daughter Madge were getting on quite excellently without her. Indeed, that seemed rather unduly stressed. But here she was. The statement of this, to be enlarged on no doubt later, had violently switched the talk on to a discussion on free will. Edith, it may be remarked, had arrived at her house in town only to find that her husband and daughter had already gone away for Whitsuntide, and being unable to support the idea of a Sunday alone in London, had sent off a telegram to Dodo, whom she knew to be at Winston, announcing her advent, and had arrived before it. On the other hand, her luggage had not arrived at all, and for the present she was dressed in a tea-gown of Dodo's and a pair of Lord Chesterford's tennis shoes, which fitted her perfectly. "I wonder," said Dodo. "We talk glibly about free will, and we haven't the slightest conception what we really mean by it. Look at these two cigarettes. I am going to throw one away in a moment and smoke the other, but there is no earthly reason why I should throw this away rather than that, or that than this. They are both precisely alike. I think I can do as I choose, but I can't. Whatever I shall do has been written in the book of fate. Something comes in, I don't know what it is, which will direct my choice. I say to myself, I choose to smoke cigarette A and throw away cigarette B, but all the time it has been already determined. So in order to score off the book of fate, I say that I will do precisely the opposite, and do it. Upon which fate points with its horny finger to its dreadful book, and there it has all been written down since the beginning of the world, if not before. Don't let us talk about free will any more, for it makes one's brain turn round like a dancing dervish, but continue to nurse our illusion on the subject. You could have stayed in Germany, but you chose not to. There." Edith had not nearly finished telling Dodo about these concerts, in fact she had barely begun, when the uncomfortable doctrine of free will usurped Dodo's attention and wonder. "The first concert, as I think I told you, was at Leipzig," she said. "It was really colossal. You don't know what an artistic triumph means to an artist." "No, dear, tell me," said Dodo, still looking at her cigarettes. "Then you must allow me to speak. It was crammed, of course, and the air was thick with jealousy and hostility. They hated me and my music and everything about me because I was English. Only they couldn't keep away. They had to come in order to hate me keenly at close quarters. I'm beginning to think that is rather characteristic of the Germans. They are far the most intense nation there is. First I played 'I Thought You Conducted,'" said Dodo. "Yes, we call that playing. That is the usual term. First I played the Dodo Symphony. I composed one movement of it here, I remember, the Scherzo. Well, at the end of the first movement, about three people clapped their hands once, and there was dead silence again. At the end of the second, there was a roar. They couldn't help it. Then they recollected themselves again, having forgotten for a moment how much they hated me, and the roar stopped like turning a tap off. You could have heard a pin drop." "Did it?" asked Dodo. "No, I dropped my baton, which sounded like a clap of thunder. Then came the scherzo, and from that moment they were Balaams. They had come to curse, and they were obliged to bless. What happened to their free will then?" "Yes, I know about Balaam," said Dodo. "He comes in the Bible. Darling, how delicious for you. I see quite well what you mean by an artistic triumph. It's to make people delight in you in spite of themselves. I've often done it." Dodo had resolved the other problem of free will that concerned the cigarettes by smoking them alternately. It seemed very unlikely that fate had thought of that. They were both finished now, and she got up to pour out tea. "If I could envy anybody," she said, "which I am absolutely incapable of doing, I should envy you, Edith. You have always gone on doing all your life precisely what you meant to do. You've got a strong character, as strong as this tea which has been standing. But all my remarkable feats have been those which I didn't mean to do. They just came along and got done. I always meant to marry Jack, but I didn't do it until I had married two other people first. Sugar? That's how I go on, you know, doing things on the spur of the moment and trusting that they will come right afterwards, because I haven't really meant them at all. And yet, horrible to relate, by degrees, as the years go on, we paint the pictures of ourselves which are the only authentic ones, since we have painted every bit of them ourselves. Everything I do adds another..."